Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Well, with the cash continues to slide into harvest, where can farmers expect a steady trade? We'll explore that and next week's USDA crop production report, all today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Ellen Dearden of Ag Review from Morton, Illinois, and Brian Maple with FC Stone & Company out of Indianapolis, Indiana. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Paul Cooley, what are your guesses for next week's crop production report?
Well, Todd, I'm going to go into the bushels per acre. I think we're awfully close to this 150 bushel mark. And as far as the soybeans are concerned, my best guess on this is somewhere in that 41 to 41 and a half. I'm very concerned about the weather forecast in the first 15 days of August.
And Brian Maple of FC Stone.
Yeah, we put our numbers out this week. We were 151 on the corn and 41.3 on the beans. And my concern is what the USDA does with the condition ratings, with condition ratings slipping into this report. Do they actually back down just a little bit based on those condition ratings? So USDA may come out with something different, but we tend to believe that it's 151 to 41.42 on the beans.
Ellen Dearden of Ag Review.
I guess I'm going to be the lone ranger here and suggest that the yields are probably coming out from USDA on the high side of things, maybe in that 152, maybe as high as 153 on the corn, 42 to 42 and a half on the bean.
Brian, as you take a look at the numbers across the board from the trade, how do your numbers compare to what the trade's thinking in general?
Well, I think in general people are feeling like the crop's in pretty good shape. From what we talk around Iowa, the area that's in poor shape is a fairly small area. People are hearing some fairly good yield results out of some yield checks out of Illinois so far. I guess I'm just a little concerned that they've got Indiana pegged just a little bit, but I think we're right in that 150 to 152 area is where the trade's looking right now. Beans probably somewhere right around 41.
Ellen, you watched the text just a bit. Can you tell me about the technical side of this marketplace and the way things traded for the week, please?
Actually, I thought the corn performed reasonably well. Dease corn now has a lot of resistance around this 265 area, 265 and a half. Some pretty good support now, just under 260, around 259. We closed in that range. We did sell off on Friday after 2 days that we've tried that resistance area, but I thought we've performed rather admirably. You have to keep in mind, too, Todd, that we've got the funds long the corn, and they've stayed and are comfortable with that position, so I think they will defend it there. On the bean side, Todd, we've had kind of sloppy trade over the week's time. I don't see this November bean having a lot of activity much above the 606 area. That's a lot of resistance there. But likewise, we've got pretty good support now in the 592 to 595 range.
Paul, tell me about the slide in the last couple of weeks, what you make of it, and how elevators and storage might be set up as we head into the harvest season.
Well, we know that the big user, the ethanol industry, has a ton of money. They got a lot of money to hedge. They have a lot of money to buy the crop and put it away. And we are also hearing the word tip back in the Midwest. And, of course, even in the best fertile soils in the state of Illinois, I hear this from Roanoke, Illinois, Allerton, Illinois, even in Champaign County, all over the state, we are hearing the word tip back. That's part of the design of the new modern hybrid to correct itself if there is some stress. The million-dollar question is, in my mind, is the depth of the kernel and also the weather forecast. The weather forecaster that I have the most confidence in is very stingy with rainfall over the next 15 days, and that's at least the bottom two-thirds of Illinois, the bottom 50-60% of Iowa. And with that in mind, I think that the market could be looking at something down the road, because we are in a futures game, maybe something in below the 148-149 bushel per acre average. And that augurs well for prices, particularly when we're talking about a billion bushels of carryover next year. To me, it has a lot of ingredients of excitement, and that's what the name of the game is.
All and well and good, but I'm interested in how much availability of storage there might be, what you see in terms
well,
of
we
cash
are seeing,
prices, old crop and
okay,
new crop.
Okay, good point. As far as, you know, we don't have any quarrels with this 2 billion bushel corn carryover that the government's basically talking about, but we do see basically a smaller production estimate than a year ago, and, you know, smaller acreage. We do see a lot of money being invested in grain storage. We do see a better transportation system than we did a year ago. And hopefully, if there's no hurricane or catastrophe in that level, I think the infrastructure is there ready to take the added bushels. Farmers are also building more storage. And I think there are also this really feeling that there is a big carry in the market. It will reward you, and people are very innovative in finding new storage.
Brian, this is one of the areas you cover fairly completely. I think you follow grain elevator storage a lot. Tell me about it and what's available and how you see the crop coming in this year for both corn and soybeans.
Well, let me throw out one point that is kind of interesting, that we're already trading barge freight at 650% for fall. So we're already extremely high on barge freight, which ends up working back off of the SIF basis to lead to a very small number, or a wide number, basis level at harvest time at the river points. And it all backs off of the river from there. You've got elevators that are going to sit here and have to choose what they're going to store, because we're already sitting here at carries that are wider than what they got the entire year last year. And in some cases, we're running 32 cents east to July corn. We're running 51.5 cents sep to July on the wheat. So, in other words, if you're holding wheat today, you can afford to carry wheat all the way to new crop next year, because you own it today at somewhere around probably $1.20 under next year's July, and you'll have about 20 cents interest in it. So I see basis levels staying wide and getting wider all the way into harvest time.
You agree with that?
I agree with that 100%. I think we're going to stay fairly wide. I think a lot of these ethanol plants have already got their needs covered well into harvest, and some stuff booked beyond that. I see a situation that elevators published rates in our neck of the woods around the Peoria area for carrying grain over into the new crop year have doubled from a year ago. I'm also seeing minimum storage rates moving up at least 20%. Now, that says to me that storage is going to be tight, at least in West Central Illinois. Everybody wants to play this carry game, and I think storage is going to be extremely tight. By the time we get to harvest, unless this harvest is really spread out, I look for some real bottlenecks.
Is there a danger in everybody carrying, trying to play the carry game? Is there a danger somewhere that I'm not thinking about, that the market could crash somewhere along the lines in, I don't know, January or March, when all that comes onto the marketplace, if everybody's trying to store it? And maybe I'm just going down
the
wild hen
chase here. Todd, last year, if there was going to panic the farmer, it would have been last year. You know, the farmer's pretty tough guy. He learned how to cope last year. He basically put the bean crop away, paid some pretty good storage bills, and also he did a pretty good job of putting the corn crop away, at least the commercial people. But I wonder if maybe some of the industry is possibly wishing a little bit too much on those wide basis levels, and whether that'll actually materialize is the million-dollar question, because we've seen 50, 60 million bushels a month come in from lone beans, and then the market hasn't crashed to too big extent. and the cash, you know, the demand level on this corn is going to be so tremendous next year that the industry knows that they better not miss any grain out there, because it is going to be harder to buy at some point in time. And those basis levels do improve rather quickly in the next year.
Wait a second. Go back. You're going to have to explain. What are they wishing for on the wide basis level?
Well, I think the art of making money is to buy grain on a wide basis,
cheap,
sell it on the board, and carry and make the carry narrow and put that extra income in their market. So the farmer knows that and knows that there's 1 billion bushels of corn carry over next year, and they're looking at something over 2 billion this year and better prices. You know, the futures market is saying things are going to get better down the road. So, you know, the futures market is telling us that it's a big income item to carry the grain. And the art of this thing is to put that kind of wide basis grain away.
Oh, so you're basically telling me that the farmer this time around has the industry by the tail.
Well, not so much that, but I think they're going to be partners with the industry, and I think the industry wants to be partners with the farmer too. And I think that's one reason why not only did the elevators and the ethanol people and farmers, you know, they built a lot of storage this year, and that's something that's a new game. It's going to be put away pretty quick.
What's left in the marketplace yet to come in?
A lot. There's still quite a bit out here on the farm yet to come in. And the problem that you've got is your elevators are sitting here with quite a bit of storage in hand today too. I've got a couple elevators over there that are probably 50% full today. Because if you're sitting here and you're looking at, like, take new crop values. You can sell new crop trains Columbus at 35 under the D's and 32 cents. That means that you're owning, or if you're selling that, you're selling corn at 67 under the July. Well, you're not going to sell that unless you have to sell it. Or you go out and you lock up the carry, and we're doing some of that with corn that we're buying. But still, you're going to try and be full all the way through this thing, because the market's paying you carry.
One additional point, though, is you know, a big determinant on whether they can actually carry this wide basis through is the actual production number in November and October. And if we do see it under that 149 level, I think it's going to be a lot easier to put away than, let's say, a 152 or 3 national crop.
But it looks like we're going to be, I mean, everybody's sort of guessing in that 149, 150 level at this point. And if we get a couple of rains in August, it's probably going to come in at that range. So there's going to be an awful lot of crop there.
Yeah, but don't forget, some of the meteorologists out there are pretty stingy on the rainfall for the first 15 days of August, Todd.
I have another question. Has the marketplace accurately gauged when demand for ethanol will really hit at this point? And I suppose if you look out, you look at the December, and you're talking about over $3 for December of next year, 2007. But I'd really have to take a look at the May again and to see where it is. But have they done a good job of gauging when that demand will be there? Or are we going to be stuck with a lot of crop too overpriced at this point, and it'll drop dramatically at some point?
I think we've got pretty steady demand on this ethanol, and it seems to be building, you know, just on a, you know, regular up move. I don't think there's any problem so long as crude oil prices stay in the 70s per barrel. Anything under 72 is probably an issue, but as long as crude oil prices stay high, it doesn't matter that if we've got corn prices up at $260, $280, $3. The rub is going to be if we've got high input costs, raw costs on the corn, or whether we switch to switchgrass or whatever is an alternate, raw material.
My take is a little different here. Can we really buy more than 82 million acres next year with high-priced soybeans and high-priced wheat next year? Can we really get central Illinois and the go-go areas of Illinois to go more at 80, 90% corn? Well, price is a big factor. We know the South American farmer's in a lot of debt. He owes some big bills to some major fertilizer companies, maybe 2 years. He's stuck with some horrible cash flow problems. That's a factor. The second factor is we're starting to hear whispers in the industry, you know, where you're talking about 500-600 million more bushels of corn usage in ethanol next year. The second thing is we are hearing new people learning how to construct ethanol plants. Instead of maybe three or four outfits, there's new engineering going on in the industry, and I think that that is the big surprise. There's a tremendous profit out there, and people are willing to build ethanol plants nonstop.
But you think the big surprise is that ethanol plant production or construction will increase in pace?
I think it will.
I think we're limited on how much we can. That's the problem right now, is trying to get contractors to actually build them the way you want them to be built. We've almost maxed that out at this point. And back to your original question, I think we have gauged it fairly closely on what the growth in demand will be. If there is a surprise to our guys that are carrying corn, it'll be in central Indiana that the Clymers plant or the Linden plant get built in time.
Yeah.
And the longer that takes to get that off and running, here's your Cargill and your Andersons that are sitting here holding, and they're full of corn. So at some point they have to dump that in the market, and that turns bearish to basis at that point to get ready for a new crop. But I think from what we're seeing right now, we're gauging it pretty well, Todd, on what the demand's going to be on ethanol.
I want to follow up on something that you said, Paul. You talked about soybean production in South America, corn production here in the U.S., and both of those are going to have to be high-priced. If you're going to want soybeans to be grown in South America, you've got to get a fairly high price because they owe a lot of money. And if that's the case, the price of corn's got to be pretty good.
Well, there's knowledgeable people that feel there could even be an acreage reduction down there in South America because of the economic factors. And so that augurs well towards this, you know, if you can't get beans below this level here with this kind of a carryover, you know, it could get actually improve. And, you know, $6, been a lot of $6 beans, new crop beans being bid out in the country.
Yeah, and we have $4 wheat still too. So let's talk a little bit about that and maybe about what kind of decisions guys need to be making now. If they're going to consider wheat for next year, anybody think that that's a good idea to put soft red winter wheat into the mix? I know it depends a bit on where you are in the state and around the nation, but
my opinion is we're going to see more acres of soft red winter wheat next year in the Midwest.
My take would be to plant the soft red winter wheat and then decide next spring whether you want to tear it up. See where corn's at that point. But with the values you've got on soft red winter, plant it, sell it. Hedge it, in other words, and then next spring, if corn is sitting there at 3.25, then maybe you tear that wheat up and go plant corn.
Yeah. Have you run the numbers? Can that actually work? Can you pull? I know they do that down south, that they do that quite a bit of the time, but does that actually work? Can you pull that off and make it actually pay?
If corn's high enough, you sure can.
Seems to me that the soft red winter wheat acres will be up tremendously in Indiana and Illinois both, particularly if we can get this corn crop off this fall. I wanted to go back and make mention, nobody's talked at all about a wet fall this year. And I know that some of the weather people that I talked to said, well, it's a possibility we could have kind of a wet spell there in October. Now, what would that do to corn basis and what would it do to wheat planting? You know, those would be a huge bugaboo that nobody's talked about.
And the answers are?
The answers are we're not going to get the soft red winter wheat acres that I would expect to see an increase of, you know, 6-7% in Illinois at least. And we could end up seeing corn bases get very narrow, get really tight. You know, and boy, wouldn't that just turn everybody's boat upside down?
One other thing, and I don't think this will be the case. There have been years past where there have been premiums paid by elevators for early harvest. There's no reason for them to do that this year, is there, or is there?
Well, you know, there's always, historically in the good old days, there was a basis tightening, you know, in September just because everybody let their bins get too empty. And I'm sure we'll see some quick shipment bids on soybeans and to some extent corn. You know, one of the things that we had to realize is 2 years ago the marketplace was snookered with a lot larger crop than anybody dreamed. And then, of course, last year we had a major problem with the Katrina situation and transportation. And the crop was put away, and everything functioned right. And we have a lot more storage people than we had and a lot more demand in the future. And there's a lot more money out there to handle this crop. And so I guess my feeling is that it's not an insurmountable, scary situation like we have seen.
Okay, Paul. everything's rosy. What can go wrong? What, have you thought about it? What can happen that can go wrong here?
Well, I think that what could go wrong is A, if we would get a surprising inch rain all over the Midwest the middle of next week, and you'd have a 153 or bushel corn crop or something of that nature, or we would have some major hurricane or something like that. But, you know, this is the United States of America, and things are pretty innovative out there.
So things are going along fairly good, and unless we have a really bumper crop in terms of from this point, we have another inch rain and we really put some grain into these kernels, everything looks pretty good through the fall right into next spring.
I think so. And of course, the grain industry is so innovative. And, you know, processing plants are putting in faster dumps. They know they have to get the beans bought. It's very innovative what we're seeing out there. And we're not back in the 1950s. This is a new era. And the elevators and grain industry is gearing up to handle it.
Any bugaboos you see?
Well, I mean, what if we would get surprised? Last year at this time, we pretty much had the Illinois crop killed. You had people dropping under 100 bushels an acre for yields in Illinois, and what we ended up with, was it 143, Paul, I think, was the yield for the state. What if we find that the northwest Iowa and some of that is still coming in with 150, 160, and the balance of the state is running 220 to 250? We could have a lot of surprises. I'm not sure that we know what the potential of these crop genetics are today, to where if we have ideal weather, are we going to see an average yield that comes in at 180 across the nation? I just don't know that we know what the potential is. And so I think there could be some interesting things yet to come on how big this crop is.
Okay. Tell me what your best advice for a farmer today on soybeans, and they need to make cash sales at some point in the next 7 months.
I think the big question, just to preface your question to me, the big question is still with people that need to make sales for this calendar year, either for fall or delivery.
Yep.
That's been my number one question for the last 2 weeks, both on the bean side and the corn side. For beans, I'm going out a ways. I'm not doing any pricing at this stage of the game on the futures market. All I want to do is maybe lock in some basis if we see some basis improvement for that Jan-March time period, but I'm not doing any pricing at all.
I'd be a holder of both commodities. I think that the thing that scares me, there, you know, the people have sold too much 7 and 8 corn, and that bothers me a great deal because I do see better times ahead, and I think the people that know how to put this crop away are going to be the real winners.
It might be if you can't. What you're going to hold all your crop, but what? I don't have that much storage. What am I got to do something.
Those people have been very innovative about pushing. And if anything, I think that the amount of new crop corn sales, you know, have been good.
Where are we with beans on you?
Well, I've got 75% already sold, both corn and beans off the farm. So I've got everything that I have to move at harvest time already moved. If you don't have it moved, Ellen brought up some technical points earlier that if we break out of this, beans have really been in a sideways pattern for the last 7 months, Eldon, I think, something like that. If we bust below that, I think you got to get them sold if you have to move them at harvest time. If you can hang on to stuff, as we've sat here and talked, the carry pays you to hang on to them. There again, if we break some of these lower points out here, you probably want to step out and get your hedges in place in the deferred slots and wait for the basis to come back to you. That's where your real gain's going to be, I think, right now.
Any points that anybody wanted to make? I have another question that I want to go down kind of a different path. But any points that you haven't covered that you wanted to today?
I'd like to make one. Maybe this will lead into something else you're going to talk about. The guys that I talk to, the feedlot guys that I talk to in the West, in Kansas, Nebraska, et cetera, are really concerned about supplies of corn and milo. And so that's a completely different twist than what we're hearing about in the central Midwest.
You mean that they're able actually to get it out of the Midwest?
To move it out of the Midwest. So much of this corn from western Iowa, which has been their venue for supplies, is going now into these ethanol plants. that they're just not seeing the supplies?
It plays a bit into where I wanted to go. And I didn't know whether you had thought about this or not, but after my recent trip to Ukraine, I was – and they have a much broader spectrum of crops that they grow, much more like Minnesota would. So they grow soybeans and corn, soft red and spring wheat, both sunflower and sugar beet. And I was thinking about how – the Midwest might change, or if it needs to change in crop rotation. We've talked a little bit about adding more soft red winter wheat into the mix. But as you think about ethanol and what will be feeding these plants, we've talked about switchgrass just a bit. What are the other possibilities of putting into this mix that might work? Have you thought about that? Because usually it's the first guy in that makes the most money. So what's a crop that could potentially be a premium crop to grow to put into the ethanol plant that might be a higher energy use, so that we know if you put one unit, for instance, and I know this can't happen in the Midwest, but you put one unit of sugar cane in and you get 8 units of energy out. You put one unit of corn in, you get 1.4 units out. Sugar beets, I think, are 1.8. So what are the possibilities?
Well, Todd, we hear this deal about taking the ear and stalk and the whole item and producing, ethanol out of the entire stalk. And, of course, the trouble with that idea is that it takes so much volume. And who wants a big, bulky hay wagon going down the road or a silage wagon full of that particular commodity? It just takes so much. Energy prices are so expensive now, and we think that corn is the best bet right now, and we do have a lot of new things. Corn on corn seems to be working real well on this Drummer Flanagan go-go soils that we have, and so the farmer is doing it. But the trouble is that there is a certain group out there that's going to stay with a rotation, still plant with no-till operations, and corn on corn doesn't really augur very well for that type of farming situation.
Corn on corn, okay, or you have other ideas?
No, we'll see. I think we'll see an increase in the farmers that go two-thirds, one-third. They'll have 2 years of corn, then they'll plant beans on that field, and then they'll come back to 2 years of corn. And I think we'll see a greater shift towards that, but I still look long-term. I think that corn's really not the answer to our energy needs here in the U.S., because today we could take our entire production, I think, and it works out to about 12% of our petro needs for this nation. So I don't see it as being a long-term fix for everything. And you're right, something will come up that we will be using alternate fuels made from something other than corn, I think, long-term. I don't have an idea what that is, Todd.
I assume you mean long-term, 15 or 20 years down the road. So the boilerplate kind of thing for these plants, which is 20 years in length, I think, for most
and
of the
ethanol plants.
And I also
think it'll be interesting to see how the public handles it when we do have our first real crop failure and all of a sudden we start driving hog production out of business, poultry production out of business, because Ellen makes a point, same one down in the southeast. We got to wonder where these guys are going to get their corn now that Indiana is concentrating on ethanol. You run out of places to pull that corn from.
Any final comments from you, Ellen?
It just seems to me, I think the ethanol bubble might break based on water needs for these plants are so high. And the more we talk about dryness and water issues, I think are going to be right at the fore.
Any final words, Ellen Dearden?
I think it will be interesting to see Friday's reports that come out from USDA, but it's going to be weather this week.
I continue to be fairly negative basis levels. I think if you don't have your basis locked in, you probably need to get it locked in for this fall.
And Paul Cooley, that was Brian Maple, of course.
My private weather person is very stingy with rainfall the next 15 days in the southern two-thirds of Illinois.
That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. If you'd like to hear it again, you can always do that at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids. Funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.